And welcome. Thanks for tuning in to our series of Conversations with the Candidates. My guest today, Sia Kyriakakos. She is a candidate in the 2nd Congressional District in the Democratic primary for the seat that's currently held by Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger. He has announced his intention to retire at the end of his term. That ends at the beginning of January in 2025. Ms. Kyriakakos is 55 years old. She lives in Cockeysville. She was born here in Baltimore. She is an artist. She holds an MFA from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. She also has a teaching certification from Central Connecticut State University, and she got an undergraduate degree at the Maryland Institute College of Art here, MICA. In Baltimore. She is an art educator at the Morgenthaler Vocational Technical High School, and she has she is married to Morgan Showalter, a Kerwin commissioner. She's got two children, an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old. She was also voted the 2017 Maryland State Teacher of the Year, and she was a finalist for the National Teacher of the Year in 2018. She is a first-time candidate, has not held elective office before. Ms. Kyriakakos, it's great to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
So why politics? Why Congress in particular? You have a very clearly successful career as a teacher if you've been voted the Teacher of the Year. Why walk away and join the political fray?
Exactly for that reason. When I was Maryland State Teacher of the Year and national finalist, they plucked me right out of the classroom. And basically, we traveled all over the United States, coming, making appearances, making speeches. And in one of the last conferences in San Diego, it must have been a politician who was in charge of giving money to Maryland for education, who I was kind of torturing about giving more money to our kids. And finally, he took me aside and said, Sia, that's enough. It's cheaper to import talent than to educate our own. And at that point, all along, I kind of had this feeling anyway that we needed to be at the table. And very often in these meetings, we were more like window dressing. Here's the beautiful Teacher of the Year. She's here to advocate, support, and validate what we're saying. But they weren't really listening.
By importing talent, what does that mean?
That means bringing them from abroad or bringing them from another state. You know, to educate our own kids costs money. But by bringing somebody who has the qualifications we need for the job or the workforce from Pennsylvania, from Canada, from India, it's cheaper than educating our own talents. And I don't have a problem, obviously.
Our own teacher talents you're talking about.
I'm talking about our kids, the talent that exists in our classrooms, cultivating the workforce that we have here and giving the resources that we need, whether it is a new immigrant that comes here and he needs training or language or the giving money to the first graders or a pre-start program, you know, in order to give them a head start to success. That's what I mean.
So that convinced you that the way to counter that way of thinking was to become a member of Congress?
Well, office. I think I needed, we need representation, and all of us need to be represented at the table, making policy, changing policy, being the voice, advocating. And in my service as Teacher of the Year, and also while I was serving the State Department as a Fulbrighter three times, I became like an ambassadorial voice. As a Fulbrighter, more like for who we are as Americans, you know, like in kind of changing how people see us from the outside.
And let's explain to folks what a Fulbright scholarship is.
The Fulbright was established after World War II by, I think it was Congressman Fulbright?
William Fulbright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From
mm-hmm.
Alabama.
And it was in order to exchange ideas and send our brightest and most talented to the world and also bring the world to America in order to not have wars, basically. So we understand each other's perspectives and respect them and get to know each other and see who we are as a humanity and not have another war.
So talk about your international experience then.
So when I finished my MFA from Chicago, I took a Fulbright to go to Greece, which opened up basically the world to me, because the 1 year Fulbright became a 5 year stay in Europe. And I traveled to over 27 countries working as an artist, as a teacher, as a maker, as a creator. And in that capacity, I worked with people in the street, artisans, teachers, artists, bureaucrats of governments, heads of state, always talking about culture and building community. So it's kind of interesting, that journey, because I had been a teacher and I left the classroom to go get my MFA. And when the classroom informed my practice as an artist and I wanted to make work that involved building community and trust like I had done in my classroom. And then eventually when I became a Fulbrighter and went out into the world and represented the states that way, I did the same thing. And eventually when I came back to Baltimore, and I chose to teach in Baltimore City because I felt that that's where I was needed, I continue to do the same thing, build community, build trust. And hopefully if I get to Congress, that's what I want to do there. I think we need to build trust, knock down walls, and start having conversations.
So managing a classroom is, you know, quite a feat, and thank you for your service. How do the skills that you've developed as a practicing artist, as a community builder through your work, and as an educator, how do you think they will translate to Capitol Hill?
Good question. Well, have you ever come into a classroom in Baltimore?
Yes, many times, as a matter of fact.
Please come to mine. You know, as a teacher, I think that has been my biggest lesson, I think. Like coming, you know, I was an international artist. I represent Greece at the Venice Biennial. Big deal.
It is a big deal.
It is a big deal. And I had been a teacher. And when I was working as an artist, I was also teaching at the college level. But coming back to Baltimore City, and I was working at the old Waldberg building at the very end of North Avenue.
Yep.
It was as if I knew nothing. And I had to start from the beginning. And
knew nothing about teaching, knew nothing about students, knew nothing
about
what?
Well, it was because, yes, yes, absolutely, because it all came crashing down. You know, I thought I knew so much and I knew nothing, right? And I was really humbled and I had to shut my own voice and start to listen. And so those global competencies, if I can say it that way, that I had developed in traveling came to play in the classroom. So I had to listen, look, understand, look at their history, my students' history, the trauma they might have come with, where they were coming from, and what they actually wanted, where they wanted to go. And I have this uncanny ability of actually seeing their full potential at times, because they're teenagers, that they can't, and their full beauty and everything that and they can be and they can do. And I push them to the limit to do that. And I do it with a lot of love, full of empathy, and a lot of hard work. So these are the kind of qualities I'm going to bring into Congress. I'm going to come into this with empathy, with open ears, with an open heart. I don't think we should approach governance that way. You know, I work for the collective good in my classroom, work for the collective good for our state. I think that's the most important thing.
Congress is a really difficult place to do that in. It's not that it's a bad aspiration, and many of the folks that I talk to in this series of conversations with the candidates have the same view. They want to go in. They want to be open. They want to, you know, listen carefully to the other side. You're a Democrat. The Republicans currently have a one-vote majority. I mean, it's a very, very evenly split House of Representatives. And the Republicans tend to vote with the Republican caucus. The Democrats tend to vote with the Democratic caucus. So all of the conversations, the communication, the listening that you can do, it comes down to a vote, doesn't it? You know, on every single issue. And voting is not nuanced. It's up or down.
It's yes or no.
And it's yes or no. So that can be a real barrier to the kind of communication that you want to have. It's not to say you can't work with folks on the other side, but how do you reconcile the fact that, you know, human communication is a nuanced thing where voting is a very unnuanced thing?
Good question. So I think we need to find, we're not all going to agree on the same things, obviously. Obviously, we're not agreeing on the same things. But we need to find that one nuance that brings us together and then start unraveling or weaving from there, as it might be, and trying to build that. I think one person can and can't make a difference. You know, we talk about one person having being able to make the difference, but I think we need to work collectively and work towards an end that will benefit us all. One vote, I don't know. I think it has to do with sitting down, breaking bread, and making it happen. Talking about Greek food, right? We need to just get to know each other.
Is the fact that you and some of the other candidates in the race don't have any political experience, any elected office experience, should that be of concern to voters? I mean, the leader in the race is the current county executive, right, of Baltimore County, Johnny Olszewski Jr. He was in the House of Delegates. He served in the executive capacity. He's very experienced in the game of politics, as it were. But it's not a game. It's actually a profession. Is the fact, that your experience is different than in the political realm something that should be of concern to voters?
That's a fair question, right? And I thought about that too. But people need to look at what they value and who they value. And they need to see who is being represented. Right now we have an all-male delegate, right?
Delegation, yep.
Thank you,
sure,
for correcting me. We need people of color, we need women, we need all ages. We need to switch it up. Johnny Olszewski has a lot of experience. He's very eloquent. I respect him. He's great, honestly. But, I bring something fresh to the table. I haven't been in politics, but I have been a union activist. I've advocated for my students, my teachers, my family, my community. We all need to be represented. And if we're always putting in experienced politicians, you're going to get experienced politician experience, things happening on the other end. It's going to be politics as usual. I don't know.
What committees would you want to serve on in Congress if you're elected?
Education and workforce. Education, of course, because I am a teacher. Science, space, and technology would be very interesting. Again, pushing towards research for science, especially at a time when science is being challenged. And possibly foreign affairs. Of course, as a freshman, you get placed. You don't get picked. So
Yeah, but eventually,
hopefully.
Perhaps you would be able to get to pick. Dutch Ruppersberger has been in office for a long time. If you were elected, would the citizens of the 2nd District be represented, by a person who is philosophically divergent from Dutch? Or would it be, how do you think you would compare your service in office to his in terms of your political philosophy, how you would vote?
Dutch has done an amazing job, and he's well-loved. And I think I would be a fresh voice. A little bit, Dutch is a bit in the middle, and I think that represents the people of District 2 very well. And I find myself somewhere closer to Dutch in that respect.
Closer to Dutch than than what?
So the District 2 is getting diversified in terms of its populations. In my neighborhood alone in Cockeysville, I have a Pakistani family on one side, South American family on the other, and it moves on to having a Asian family, a white family, a mixed African and American and white family. I think being Greek American and first generation starts representing with me, representing our community very well. And in that kind of way, I'm going to represent our people more holistically.
Let's talk about some of the issues that you would face if you're elected to Congress. Let's talk about education, which is clearly near and dear to your heart. Again, Teacher of the Year. What do you think the federal role in local education, K through 12 students is?
One, financing Head Start programs is really important, making sure our young ones come to school prepared eventually to learn. Making sure we provide young mothers with daycare. I think that's where it should be also financed so they can go to work and also have a good place for their kids to go to learn and be. In terms of providing a cohesive K through 12 education that is inclusive, culturally sensitive, and making sure the states have the resources to develop those curriculums that they need. Making sure we look and talk to our teachers and our unions in terms of what the teachers need in order to be successful in their classrooms. Like we all know, smaller class sizes are very important to kids learning. Providing programs for, as we have an influx of immigrants coming into our schools, to honor their cultures as well and their depths of knowledge. For example, I have three beautiful Syrian girls in my class, refugees, and they have to learn a foreign language, but why don't we allow them to just keep on developing their own Arab languages instead of losing their culture, so that our culture is enriched by who they are and what they bring into this fabric?
That's a lot, isn't it?
I think we need to think about all these things. Food mm-hmm. and nutrition is super important. Making sure programs like for gifted and talented kids and our kids with special needs are fully financed.
And oftentimes arts education isn't fully financed.
Just because it's mine, I didn't want to throw it in. But
to
yes,
be marginalized like it, that, yeah. Music teachers, art teachers, dance teachers,
all of that. Yeah. And that's what brings the kids to school too, that we keep forgetting. Like what is going to bring a child to school and want to stay there? It is those special things like arts and theater and music. It's not a math test.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned immigrants, so let's talk about immigration. As a first-generation immigrant yourself, you bring that perspective. What should the immigration policy of the United States be? Not that it could be achieved anytime soon, given the fact that we've got, you know, pretty serious recalcitrance on the part of the very slim majority in the House of Representatives. But if you were elected, what kind of immigration policy would you advocate for, and would it resemble the bill that has been proposed by Senator Lankford and that Speaker Mike Johnson in the House is now refusing to bring to the floor?
Which is kind of like an atrocity. They worked on this thing for years, and then finally with one word from, anyway. We need to find, we obviously need to reform. And we need to find a pathway to citizenship for our, for the people knocking on our doors, right? And we need, in order to introduce them to the workforce, in order for them to be productive citizens, and to tax them too, you know? So they are, people feel that immigrants can be a burden to society. That way, they won't be. They will be contributing to our society. Also, recognizing the talent that's coming in too, and trying to figure out what these people actually know. Like, I have a very good friend whose dad came as a refugee from Poland back in the day. And there, he was a neurosurgeon. When he came to America, he eventually couldn't pass whatever the test was for him to pass because of the language barrier. He ended up being a nurse's assistant. Making sure that we utilize the talents that are coming in and enriching our own culture and making the fabric of America so much richer.
How does one, as member of a body that has 435 people in it, how does one move the needle on immigration to serve the voters of the second district and to serve the country at large?
I think we need to provide resources, first of all, like with the backup logs down at the border. It's not because we want to lose all these people and we give them dates a month or 2 years later. It's because there's not enough people down there to serve them. So giving the appropriate workforce and resources in order to do that, and trying to come back to the table and address this the way we need to, and really think what we want as a nation, because it's not going to stop. It doesn't matter how many laws we put at the table. People are going to keep on coming. The other thing is looking at the reason as to why people are coming is really important. What is happening in their own countries that they have to flee from? And maybe back when my parents came to the United States, it was after World War II, and it was also after a civil war in Greece. And my father's family particularly was targeted because my grandfather helped families that were deemed as communist. And he helped because they would take the father of the family and put him on an island to die, basically. And she would give to the family that was in the village oil and flour so they could survive the winter, if you can understand what I'm saying. So then my father and his brothers could not get any jobs in Greece because they were labeled as communist sympathizers. And that's what forced them out of the country, right? People who leave their countries don't want to really leave. Now, Greeks coming now to America are coming as educated, trying to get jobs at universities. They're not coming as economic immigrants as they did back then. So if we look at the countries that their people are fleeing, and we go there with diplomacy, with an open heart, and try to resolve those kind of problems, they won't be banging down on our door.
whoever the Republican nominee, and there are several Democrats in this race, several Republicans, whoever the Republican nominee is going to be in the 2nd District in the election in November, it's, I would say, likely that that person would proffer that crime, immigration, and the deficit are the three big issues of this election. Nationally, that's what the Republican Party is talking about, the talking points that they're sending to candidates on in all levels of the federal system include those. Are those three issues, crime, immigration, and the deficit, do you think those are top of mind for voters in the 2nd District? Are they the most important issues?
They are important, and safety certainly has come up a few times as I've been knocking on doors. Immigration, sure, yeah, and you said the deficit, like, and crime is, for me, is also gun violence, and we need to keep on getting tighter on how people get guns, making sure that, I can't even tell you, I just don't want to even go to another of my students' funerals anymore. I don't even want to go there. Making sure that nobody needs an arsenal of weapons in their closet. There's the red flag laws. Oh, there's so much we can do about that. But we also need to look at why crime happens. Like, why are young people turning to crime in order to make ends meet or whatever, and create resources and educational programs to support and elevate them. Also, like teaching in Baltimore City, there have been what I see is that kids need to be validated, and they end up getting into groups of people that might be of a criminal mindset just to belong somewhere. So why don't we create those spaces for our young people to belong to and lift them so they have another avenue in order to prosper and thrive? It's interesting because I think it all comes back down to education and resources and looking at it from an equitable lens. So I think that is really important. Immigration is important as well, and I think there are solutions, but we need to work together. Not one person can make a difference.
So you're running in the Democratic primary. Primaries are run by the parties. They're not run by the state. They're not run by the Board of Elections. They're run by the parties. So Democrats will be voting in this primary, no independents, no Republicans. That's the way the system works here in Maryland. It works differently in other states. Right. So Democrats, on a certain level, are going to choose the nominee that will be the strongest candidate against the Republican in the November election. And control of Congress is certainly something that is very high on people's minds, Democrats and Republicans. As we mentioned, the current majority in the Republican-controlled House, which means there's a Republican Speaker, Mike Johnson, instead of, you know, Hakeem Jeffries as a Democrat. It's only one vote, so the control of Congress is, in a way, on the ballot here in Maryland and across the country. What makes you the strongest candidate for the Democrats to elect in the primary to run against whoever the Republican candidate will be?
I'm a woman. I'm a teacher. I'm a mom. I work every day. I even right now as I'm running, I am a full-time teacher. My daughter just had surgery. She had a spinal fusion. I'm still running.
Hope she's okay.
She's doing great.
Good.
Thank you so much. She went to school for the first time on Monday all day. We were really excited. I'm an extremely hard worker, and that doesn't mean that everybody else isn't as well. I'm coming to this from a place of passion and love for our future. Does it make me better than everybody else? I'm not sure. But it's an honest, authentic place, and I will fight for our children with every part of my being. That's what I have to say about that.
Sia Kyriakakos is a candidate in the 2nd Congressional District Democratic primary for Congress for the seat currently held by Congressman Dutch Rubersberger. It's great to meet you. Thank you so much, and good luck out on the trail.
Thank you so much.